Today I want to talk about something different. We're still in our Mark series, and today I want to talk about a story that is pretty interesting and has actually colored Friends Church. So when I was in seminary, my first year of seminary, I had an experience that just changed everything for me. I was this punk kid showing up at seminary, you know, not really knowing what's going on, not really knowing why I was there. And I thought I had an idea of what was going to happen. And this moment changed it all. And in fact, it changed me so much that the change still affects Friends Church today. Friends Church, in part, is what it is because of this experience for me. And it happened from a fairly simple little story. I was sitting in my first year systematic theology course. Dr. Kenza was up front, this kind of roly-poly black guy. And of course, I was sitting in the back, because where else would an out-of-place ex-engineer sit when you're at seminary, right? You know, I'm not a keener. I'm not going to sit in the front row. I'm wearing thrift store jeans that have holes in them. I have a t-shirt that looks like a 12-year-old hockey fan would wear. I have a shaved head. I have no clue what these people are talking about. I don't have the education that they have. None of it. So I'm sitting in the back trying to figure out how to not show my ignorance. Basically, just to try and fit in even a little bit. And for those of you who haven't been blessed with a systematic theology course, it's kind of like this course that takes all of your theologies and puts them all together in a big chunk. And that day, the chunk that we were putting into the bigger chunk, this chunk, was the devil. And so Kenzo started to talk about his views about the devil. And I remember thinking, let me say it this way. I wasn't trying to stir up trouble. I know you're all not. I seriously wasn't. This was just a moment of, I have an engineering background. I know nothing about biblical studies. I'm in my first year. And I put up my hand and asked really what I thought was a simple question. I thought, like everyone would know this, I was just the dumb guy, right? And as soon as the question left my mouth, everyone was just like, whew. One guy's jaw actually dropped. I remember it. He was like, and I was like, what did I just do? So I put up my hand and asked Kenzo the question, where in the Bible does it say the devil exists? It's a simple question, right? We are there to study the Bible, and systematic theology is about how it all fits together, all this biblical stuff. So most likely they would have had a devil section. And since I'd never studied this, I assumed there was some part of the Bible that has something like this. Devil, adversary of God. Most times seen in red horns, pitchfork, tail, the whole works. Goes by the name Satan, Lucifer, Beelzebub, a few others. Most times trying to make you do bad things, you know, runs hell. I thought, like, there's going to be a verse that says all that, because that's what he was talking about. It's like the bio of the devil. I just wanted the prof to say, okay, look, it's in this book, it's in this section, read this part, and I'd feel fine. That's all I was looking for. But it wasn't a question that anyone was prepared to ask or to answer. My classmates, who all had undergrads in biblical studies, looked at me blankly. Like, how dare I ask that question? I still remember the prof. He's like, he had a binder. He'd preach from this binder, teach from his binder. And he's like flipping the pages, like, just what tearing them out. And he'd flip them back and forth like four times, the same pages. I'm like, it's not there, buddy. And then I realized something. There was no verse that said what I was looking for. There was no verse that defined the devil like Kenzo just did in that systematic theology course. And for a kid who doesn't really get this, but who was there to study the Bible, this bugged me. In fact, this changed me. Now, I'm guessing there's some of you out there who are saying, yes, but the Bible does talk about the devil. And you're right, it does. But the story isn't about, does the Bible talk about the devil? The story is about, is our views of the devil come wholly and only from the Bible? And the answer I learned that day in Kenzo's class, or in Kenzo's views, is no, they don't. His views don't just come from the Bible. They came from church tradition. They came from thought experiments. They came from logical consistencies. And I'm okay with that, honestly. That all makes sense. I'm smart enough to figure that out. But I thought I was there to study the Bible. And the views that they were sharing, they weren't all coming from the Bible. So how does one go to a Christian seminary to study the Bible and realize part of your degree isn't biblical? That rattled me, because as soon as that kind of domino started to drop, all of a sudden all the other dominoes started going, okay, well, what else did they make up? And yeah, I'm being a little dramatic. They didn't make it all up. But I'm going, what isn't biblical? Like, what else is he talking about that doesn't even exist in the Bible? Heaven, Jesus, salvation? Like, all of a sudden all these dominoes in my head just start to fall over. It's like our views about God and about Christianity, about all that we do, in that moment for me, felt fake. They felt like someone just made them up. And it scares us when that happens, doesn't it? It scared me. I thought everything we believed was like really solid. And suddenly I realize, this is a bit sketchy. So, I just want to push you guys that far, because I think for this next story to make sense, you need to feel that feeling of, what if all the stuff we were taught about God and about Christianity, about the Bible, what if it's all made up? So I want to say one more thing about this devil piece. We here at Friend Church believe each person's on a unique spiritual journey. No two journeys are exactly alike. That's what we believe here. And we believe we don't need to believe all the same things about spirituality. So if you believe the existence of the devil, I am totally okay with that. And if that helps you connect with God, I'm even going to give you a thumbs up. And I don't want my story in any way to make you feel like you need to give that up, okay? That's not what this is about. But in this moment in seminary for me, is the first realized that the thing that I grew up with, the thing that I didn't hold it dear. I scared the crap out of me my whole life. This idea of the devil who's after me and who's trying to get me to do bad things, it wasn't well supported by the biblical narratives. I'm guessing you guys have all experienced that. Either that's what brought you here to Friend Church, or we did it to you. Sorry. We have a thing about being honest, and sometimes we're maybe very honest. But you suddenly have that feeling inside like, ooh, what I thought we had all figured out suddenly doesn't quite feel all figured out. I remember talking to one person, he grew up being taught that the world is created by God in 6,000 literal years. I can't remember if that's the right number, but 6,000-ish, plus or minus. And he gets a job in geology where they're talking, you know, millions and billions of years. He's just going, where did we get 6,000 years from? I've heard people talk about someone that they love who suddenly is unwelcome by the larger church community. And it feels like we missed something, because the person that we love, shouldn't they be welcome? Shouldn't they be part of this? And all this just unsettles us, scares us. For me, that moment of learning that the devil theology I was being taught wasn't biblical, it changed everything for me. I didn't know what to do with that. It's not from the Bible. Where are we getting it? It left me feeling defensive and scared. I often talk about this icky feeling inside where it's just like, ooh, this doesn't feel good. I liked it when I didn't know that information, because now I have to deal with that information. And I don't think this is a new experience. I don't think this is a new feeling. Because the story I want to look at from the Bible today, from the book of Mark, I think this is what the story is about. It's a feeling, that icky feeling like, ooh, suddenly this doesn't seem quite as solid as it used to. Now, I often tell you stories by getting you to imagine yourself as a character in the story. And I do that for a very important reason. We believe that the stories from the Bible are impacting, yes, but not in an abstract theological way. Not like, okay, hear the story, but here's the abstract theology. No, I think it has power in the narrative itself. And often the best thing I can do for you guys is to bring you into the narrative and have you experience it from inside. I kind of sprinkle things that you need to know along the way that, you know, 21st century Canada doesn't really help us understand ancient Near East culture, but that's what I want to do today. I want you to put yourself in the place of a nice, hardworking religious official. It's probably 30 AD, somewhere around there. And Jesus has just totally blown your mind. You walked into this meeting with Jesus thinking, I got this all figured out. Like, I know what I'm talking about here. And you left with that same icky feeling going, oh, geez. I really wish I didn't know what I now know. I wish I didn't have to deal with this new thing. So imagine you're this Jewish official. And one day you and your other fellow Jewish officials decide, hey, let's go on a field trip, road trip. Or in their case, you'd have to walk, but same difference. So they walked to where Jesus was, this new rabbi that they'd all heard about and was creating quite a stir. And so he decided to sit down with them and just get to know him a little bit, you know, have a meal together. And you find yourself later that day sitting around a table with Jesus. And it has this feeling of both, like, this is amazing. Like, he's totally one of us. And then every once in a while you have this moment where you're like, huh? Did he just... You can't quite figure it all out, but it's always like you expect him to go one way and he kind of just does a little bit like, just over there. So it's in one of these moments where you're kind of pulled out of the conversation. You know, when something happens, you suddenly realize you're not getting what's going on in this conversation. You pull back and you look over and you see something that at first you can't, it's kind of like it blows your mind. It's like if suddenly a guy in a gorilla suit ran through here, you'd be like, okay, what was that? Did I just see that? What? You're in this moment and you see Jesus' disciples, his students, they walk up to the food table right next to you and they just start eating. So that was my reaction too, like, who cares? But this is an absolute travesty. This is like the most irreverent thing that they could possibly do. For them to just take the food, pick it up and put it in their mouths is basically like giving the finger to God. It's like, if you were in that moment and you were in that culture, that would be the gorilla, guy in a gorilla suit running through here. You'd just be like, I can't believe I just saw that. Like, that couldn't have happened. So what you have to understand is in Jewish culture, they take preparing to eat very seriously, especially in this day and age, extremely seriously. So I've actually brought you guys an instructional video on how to prepare your hands to eat bread if you're a good Jewish person. So, take a look. Okay, I'm getting a head nod from over there. We have a technical difficulty. That was my bad. Sorry, people. So, let me try and explain this. And they had a whole video. This is like a 2-minute instructional video on how to wash your hands before you eat. And what you do is you take a glass with two handles, you fill it up with water, then I think you take it in your left hand. You put your right hand out, you pour water onto your hand 2 times, making sure the water goes past your wrist. Not before your wrist, past your wrist. Then you put the hand in the other hand, you do 2 more on this side, 2, not 3, not 1, 2. Then you lift your hands up and let it run past your, down to your elbows, and you say a prayer. Then you do a few more things that I can't remember, and then you get to eat. That's the thing, you see? And this is what they're looking at. They're looking at looking at these disciples going, there's been no 2 on each side, no dripping down, no prayers, nothing. What are you people doing? Like, it's ridiculous. And it would have been, like, this isn't, you know, French Church View, we're like, yeah, you know, rituals, no big deal. No, this was like, you're poking God in the eye. That's what this felt like to them. You would actually feel like you and God are no longer okay if you haven't washed your hands before you eat. And so, as your mind's kind of like, I can't believe I'm watching these guys eat without washing their hands, eat without doing what God has commanded them. You do the only thing you can do in that moment. You can't just accept that. That's crazy. So you talk to the rabbi who's supposed to be teaching these people what was going on. And you ask him this. Why do disciples flout the rules, showing up at meals without washing their hands? To paraphrase, why are you letting your disciples ignore the stuff that's important to God? We know what God wants. He wants us to wash our hands. You're not washing your hands. Why not? And this is what Jesus says. Isaiah was right about frauds like you. Hit the bullseye, in fact, when he said this. These people honor me with their lips, but it's not coming from their hearts. They say they value me and what I have to say, but they teach human ideas instead. For us, that's like, well, he told you guys. But think about it from that Jewish religious perspective. You didn't make this stuff up. This is biblical. In fact, if you look at a book called Leviticus, hand washing was decreed by God. If you didn't wash your hands, you would be considered unclean if you had engaged in certain things. I won't go there because it gets weird. But that said, if you don't wash your hands, you're unclean. And here's the downside. If Trevor didn't wash his hands and he touched that mic and I touch it, I'm unclean now. So think like big market you see, you know, ancient Near East market. There's food everywhere. There's people everywhere. People are walking around touching, you know, how much for the banana, how much for this. What are the odds of you getting through there unclean or not being clean? Like, seriously, someone did something wrong. Someone didn't wash their hands, and now you're touching it. So the Jewish people are going, wait a second, if God wants us to be clean, we need to take this seriously. So we're going to make sure that before we touch any food, before we touch any cutlery, plates, anything, we're going to wash our hands so that we're clean. We don't want to make everyone else unclean. That's important. Not because we want to do it. It's not like, hey, yeah, really like to wash hands. They don't understand germs back in those days. They actually believe that God commanded this. This is what makes you and God okay. If you don't do this, God's angry at you. So they're diligent. God told Moses that we needed to do this, so we're going to do it. And now you as the religious official, feeling all that weight, the generations of teaching that you've had to wash your hands to be clean, you're watching somebody just completely ignore that. Make fun of it. Just like, whatever, I'm too good for that. And then when you tell their rabbi and say, hey, you probably didn't see it, but look over there. And the rabbi's like, yeah, it's actually you guys I got a problem with. Remember that icky feeling I started with? I think that's what they're feeling. They're just like, I walked in here thinking I understood how this all went down, and suddenly, I have no clue. I thought I had God figured out. I thought I knew what I was supposed to do. Before I eat, I wash my hands. It's the thing we do. We've done it. My parents taught me that. My grandparents taught me that. We've known this. And suddenly, that's on the table to be talked about? That couldn't have felt good. So let me put that aside for a quick second. I'll come right back to it. How many of you have heard of the Protestant Reformation? A little church history here. Good, we got maybe half the crew. It's often called the Reformation, like capital T, meaning there's nothing else. It's like the big one. It's the thing where Martin Luther got all cranked up with the Catholic Church and finally he's like, I'm done with you people. Nails something on the wall, leaves, starts Protestantism, essentially. Major shift in how we did church. Like, fundamental shift. The before and after doesn't even make sense. In the past, I'd always heard it called the Reformation. Like, there was one. The big one. But in school, in church history, another class, I had to read this book, and I remember it was like photocopy because it was no longer in print, and the guy handed it out to us, and it was in this kind of funny script on the front. It said Reformations. I was thinking, oh, look, a typo. But you know what? As I read through it, the author convincingly argued that said, no, there's not a Reformation. There's Reformations. There's been numerous times through church history and through the history of Christianity where things have just taken a left turn systematically and fundamentally changed. For example, I think Jesus was doing a reformation in that moment. He's like, yeah, by the way, forget 2,000 years of church history. Forget it all. We're going to do it different. He's a good religious or good Jewish boy. Jesus was a Jew. He's in a Jewish culture doing Jewish things. And he starts what we call the Christian religion. That's a reformation. Constantine making Christianity the state religion. Went from being this underground little thing that was persecuted to, yeah, become a Christian or die. Big shift, huh? Separation of the Catholic Church from the Eastern Orthodox Church. We still feel that today. Separation of church and state. Back in the 1100s-ish, plus or minus a couple hundred years. Huge shift. Major shift in how we do church. How Christianity looks through the world. And I think we're in run right now. Look at the church around us. Church in general is trying to figure out what the heck is this all about? Education and science are coming in and making us question things and how we see the world and all the things that we were taught to hold dear. Suddenly we're going, I think we're in the middle of a reformation. And I have a theory about how churches do this, about how reformations happen. I don't think they happen in this kind of like nice linear, like, we're going to evolve. Every day we're going to look a little different until 10 years from now. Look, we look different. I think it happens in a way similar to science. So yes, I'm going to use science to teach about spirituality today, which makes me feel very good because I'm an engineer at heart. Our ancestors at some point believed that the earth was the center of the universe. Like when you stand here, all the stars, all the suns are rotating around us. It's either called anthropocentric or andropocentric. And can you blame them? Like if you sit out there and you don't know any better, you're like, yeah, look, the stars are turning around. The sun's going around us. The moon's going around us. And it wasn't until some upstart scientist named Copernicus started to wonder, actually, you know what? There's ones that don't really rotate around us. And he got his little telescope and started doing some math. And he's like, you know what? I think maybe this looks a little different. Actually, I think the sun is there, and we're moving around the sun, and then that whole business is moving around other things. And yeah, I don't think we're the center of the universe anymore. So he basically took everything that they believed at the time, all their science, and said, yeah, totally new paradigm. Let's talk about this in a completely new, different way. He basically blew the mold up of what it meant to understand how the universe worked. For lack of a better word, he did a scientific reformation. There's a modern-day scholar, his name's Thomas Kuhn, who studied how science has evolved over the centuries. And he concluded that science doesn't evolve like I talked about. It's not like, you know, it's not like that. It happens in what he calls paradigm shifts, where we kind of, we're going along, we're the center of the universe, till somebody's like, let's throw out all the assumptions we had. Boom! Suddenly the sun is the center of our galaxy, and it goes from there. Call these paradigm shifts. It doesn't happen linearly. It happens also, and you get to a point where you're like, this doesn't work. And you throw out a whole bunch of stuff that everyone held dear, and you do it completely differently. He called it a paradigm shift. We go from the universe revolving around the earth to the earth revolving around the sun. We go from Newtonian to Einsteinian kinematics. We go from telephones on hard lines, like literally like plugged in, to cell phones. From records to MP3s. We go from storing our pictures in photo albums to storing them in the cloud, whatever that is. But it's not a smooth evolution. Like, what was the jump between the photo album on your shelf and pictures in the cloud? There is no, like, nice smooth line. It was like one day you're like, we're going to scan them and we're all going to put them in the cloud. Right? My mom still is like, but where's the picture? I'm like, Mom, it doesn't work that way anymore. You don't get one. But I really like the picture. Okay, I'll print you off one, Mom. Okay. The iPods blew away our notion of how we store our music. These happen in paradigm shifts. And I think that's what's happening in the story in Mark. And you remember I asked you to imagine yourself as a Jewish religious leader, seeing Jesus' students flagrantly disregarding all that you held dear about washing your hands and being clean for God. And you say something to Jesus at the time and say, look, this is going on. These guys are completely giving the finger to God. What is going on? And Jesus says to you, yeah, I know what they're doing. It's all good. And actually, the problem isn't them. The problem is you. Because you think you got God all figured out. You think your little models of God are actually God. I think this was the beginning of a paradigm shift that we're still feeling the effects of today. It's a major shift in how we do church, how we see God in all of Christianity. We change from this Jewish practice to something completely different. A paradigm shift. And here's the important part for us today, I think. And here's the part we often struggle with. Because what Kuhn saw in science, the majority of the scientists in Copernicus' time weren't super keen on Copernicus. In fact, they hated him. They tried to get him, like, thrown in jail. In fact, he was in jail for a while. Because if Copernicus was right, they might be wrong. And so the larger scientific community fought this tooth and nail. In almost every evolution or paradigm shift we see, the main body of people fight it tooth and nail. I'm not saying my mom fights it tooth and nail, but you know, we do, don't we? And I think that's what's going on in the story of Mark. The religious leaders are looking at what Jesus says and they're going, heck no. Because if he's right, if Jesus is right, if these guys can just walk up to the table and eat food, we've been doing this wrong for 2,000 years. I have a vested interest in making sure that we are right. You see how it works? And now, if we're going through a reformation, and I think we are, we're going through a reformation right now, we run the risk of the exact same thing. And I think that's why it's important to listen to Jesus' words today. You teach them things, saying that they're me, but they're just human ideas. They're your theology, your models of God. But they are not God. Think about it. Do you actually think that you have God all figured out? Do you think it's even possible in language to encompass God, to like figure it all out? Do you think that we define God as more than, by definition we can now take it as less than, it's something we can kind of figure out? When I say it like that, it doesn't make any sense, does it? I would never say that my theology is God, but in the moment of paradigm shift, when someone's saying, hey, we need to throw this all out, I get that feeling of like, that icky feeling that makes me go, no. I think it's right. I think my model is God. Like, I got it. I figured it out. And I think that's what Kuhn's telling us today. In these moments of paradigm shift, a lot of us just want to hold tight. I think what Jesus is telling us today is to say this. No. You don't have it all figured out. You don't have God all figured out. Don't look at your theology as God. It's a model of God. It's something that you can explore. It's something that you can use. But as soon as we say it's God, we run into some significant problems. Because all the way through church history, that's what's happened. People like us have fought these revolutions that we now benefit from. And we're at a risk today to do the same thing. So today I want to give you guys some homework. I want you to take Jesus' line seriously that we might be teaching stuff as God, but they're just human ideas. I want to do it in two steps. I want you to first become aware of your theology. I want you to be conscious of it. For those of us who grew up in church, we suck at this. because we grew up with people who all agree with us about everything. The devil? Of course the devil exists. Look, we all agree, right? So here's your assignment. I want you to go out this week and talk to somebody who doesn't agree with you. They can be an atheist, they can be from another religion, they can be from a completely different point of view, they can be from the meadow. I don't care who they are, but they got to disagree. And I want you to talk about your spiritual beliefs. And here's why. Nothing highlights your models of God more than somebody disagreeing with them. When you talk with someone who agrees with you, it's easy because they're going, well, of course, you know, we don't even need to talk about this. When you talk with someone who disagrees with you, they're going, wait a second. What was that? And you find yourself backpedaling going, oh, wait a second. Yeah, I kind of assumed that, didn't I? Not to rattle you, but to make you conscious of your beliefs. And after you've done that, I want you to do this. I want you to put your beliefs on your hand, metaphorically. And I want you to ask yourselves, which ones help me get closer to God? And which ones are getting in the way? You're now aware of them. Which ones are getting in the way of you and God? And here's the thing. Would you be willing to do that paradigm shift that says, I'm going to take that theology that I grew up with, that I loved, that has colored me for years, I'm going to put it aside for the sake of connecting with God. Don't worry, I'm not telling you to throw everything out. Some of the stuff's going to sit in your hand, you're going to go, yeah, that's spot on. It's not God, but it sure is helping me. But some of it, probably you're going to need to move aside. Because Jesus said, don't think that you have God all figured out. Don't teach your human ideas as God. Could we do that this week?